So, in case there is any doubt that the battle against Amalek is a one-off, it's a skirmish, right? We have the pasuk, Milchama l'Hashem b'Amalek midor dor. This is a battle that is not to be won in a generation, or two generations, or three generations, but it's a battle in perpetuity. And there's an element of these psukim, as we've already discussed, that really seems to get exactly at that point, that this is not going to be one in the days of Moshe, which is, Shimshi, which element of these psukim, besides just the fact that it says midor dor, already suggests that this is a kind of an intergenerational thing. Exactly, the role of Yoshua. You know, and as you saw in the Chizkuni, who believes that the Sefer in question here is not a Sefer Torah, but he calls it the Sefer Milchamos Hashem, right? Alkeni Amar B'Sefer Milchamos Hashem Esvayev B'Sufa V'Sanachalim Arnon, referred to in Sefer Bamidbar, that you saw in the Chizkuni that Sefer would be passed down not just from Moshe to Yoshua, but from Yoshua to all the Zakenim Sherichu Yamim Achre Yoshua, and to Otniel, and to Ehud Ben Gera, and Shamgar Ben Anad, and Foran Barak, all the way down till we're ready to fight Amalek. The first battle after the days of Moshe against Amalek is really the battle of Shaul. And that's precisely the point of the Chizkuni, is that given that this is intergenerational, and it has to implicate Yehoshua and all those who come after him, that's exactly why you would want to write it down to begin with. Because Sariel, as you saw in the Chizkuni, what's going to happen if you just transmit it orally? To be forgotten. Outstanding, Sariel, right? That if the whole point is that this has to be remembered, and there has to be this confrontation between the Jewish people and Amalek, you want it in writing, right? As Benny always says, why don't you put that in writing, right? So this is a very important point. Now, as you saw in Rashi, the inclusion of Yehoshua is not merely a reflection of the fact that this is intergenerational, but there's another idea here. So Rashi says, the fact that Moshe is telling Yehoshua is the first remez that we have to... Exactly, Yehoshua is machnis la'aretz. Now, the Ibn Ezra was clearly bothered by this point. The Ibn Ezra is thinking to himself, well, wait a minute. You know, how would it be known that Moshe isn't the one that's doing it? So who saw the Ibn Ezra's comment? The Ibn Ezra thinks this entire section of the Torah was actually added in the... Exactly, in the 40th year, because only at that point that it was established, you know, Yan lo hemantem bilak disheni b'nei Yisrael, lachen lo saviu esakal hazeh, el ha'aretz asher nishbati lehem. It was only at that point that it could be said with certitude that Moshe was not going to lead the Jewish people into the land of Israel. So again, Ibn Ezra wants to go so far as to say that this is added on in the Torah much later on. Okay, so that's the basic idea of Ksov Zosi Karad Vasefer Vasev Vazne Yoshua, Machoem Chazekh Amalek Mitach Shemaim, Machamal Hashem Amalek Midor Dor. Now in the middle we have this absolutely fascinating presentation of Moshe taking a very concrete and specific action. Shua, what's that specific action that Moshe takes? Exactly. Vayiven Moshe Mizbeach. Now, you would think that with the Mizbeach, what there should then be is Karban. But if you saw Unklus and the Sforno, they're both in agreement that there's no Karban here. What is there? A tefillah of sorts. Rashi says, Hashem Nisi, not that the Mizbeach is called God, but the Mizbeach is called that God did miracles for me here. Nes in the sense of miracles. The Sforno disagrees. He says, Kibi Nes is from the language here of Ase Lecha Nachash Nechoshes Vesimo So Al Nes Anapola. Hashem Nisi, Nes Lamim, God elevated me. Okay, not so much a miracle, but that Hashem was Mirome, Mumagadel.
Hashem Nisi in that sense of Shem term. But both the Sfarno and Unkla see that Moshe is praying. It's not a Mizbeach of Korbanos. Rashi's perspective was that the Mizbeach is a kind of a memorial to the fact that God did miracles at this location. So we don't find the Korban. Unkla says we find davening. Sfarno says we find davening. God is the one who, according to Sfarno, who elevated me here. According to Rashi, God is the one who wrought miracles on my behalf here. Hashem Nisi. But there's no karban that's being offered. There's only a tefillah. And I'd like to suggest to you the following. If there were a karban offered, what karban would you imagine it would be? Karban Toda. Shimon? Exactly. Now, who can go along with me here for a second and say, why dafka would you not offer a karban toda? What's the svara not to offer a karban toda? Avi? What I say? Arba chayavim lehodos. There are four that are obligated to give hodah. A person who was released from prison, a person who was stricken with a severe malady and recuperated, a person who was traveling through the desert, a person who travels through the seas. The Rav believed that these were typological. These weren't somehow hard and fixed categories, but people, as Rashi says, actually Meduyuk in Rashi and the Gemara, Shiyotin min ha-sakana. And it's striking to me that no karban toda is offered. Yes, the Mizbeach is built, but Aiden, no karban toda is offered, l'cha'ora. And it would appear that no karban toda is offered because the battle is ongoing. Milchama l'Hashem b'Amalek, midor dor. And so it's a fascinating phenomenon. All of the accoutrements are there. The Mizbeach is there, but pointedly, Moshe does not offer a karban, but he offers a tefillah. Hashem Nisi, either God did a miracle on my behalf here, but we're not really out of the woods yet, there's no Yetziya min ha-sakana, or like the Sfarno says, God elevated me here. Shimon Shimon Ross.
Well, also, can you say that they didn't bring a Torah because they still take a Shvot now, like, because they haven't been.
Well, but he could have offered a toda.
No, sure, they don't know what to do.
What's that? The pasuk says that when some of us studied last year, that when Avram was told the Zaracha Atein Esaretz Hazos, Vayiven Sham Mizbeach Vayikra B'Shem Hashem, so many of the Poreshim say you offered a karban toda. So there's an element here, even within the Mizbeach, of it being quite clear that the battle is not yet won.
Nachi.
Well, Unkos just says Ufalach Kadamohi, that he worshipped God there. But there doesn't appear to be any indication of a karban explicitly. Okay. Yeah. So, a couple of key points to summarize and to distill. Number one, there's very clear indication from the very beginning that this is only the first battle against Amalek, that everybody understands that this is going to be multi-generation, midor dor. The involvement of Yehoshua itself attests to that. Perhaps the absence of a karban toda attests to that reality. Point number one. Point number two is we have implicit, according to Rashi, as a remez, or the Chizkun even more explicitly, the idea here of succession. The idea here that Moshe might not be the one to finish this task, even with respect to bringing the Jewish people into the land of Israel. Very important. This is a critical moment in the Torah. This is the first indication. Again, that's why the Ibn Ezra was fathered. He said it's got to be in the 40th year. But if you don't go in the direction of Ibn Ezra, which is really a Das Yachid, and we'll see the Ramban tomorrow, who goes off in a different direction entirely. It seems clear, the indication is clear, that Yehoshua is going to have to carry this ball forward. Even in the context, as we spoke about last week, of the battle itself, we saw that Moshe was reliant on Yehoshua. Moshe had to do the primary thing, which of course was tefillah, because Amalek only came as a consequence of Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu imayim. But he still needed Yehoshua to carry on the actual fight against Amalek. Bichar lanu anashim v'tzehi lachem b'amalek. So this battle against Amalek gives prominence to Yehoshua, and this is the very first time we've met him. Yehoshua's role emerges in the context of an intergenerational battle. Yehoshua is introduced to us as a warrior, v'charlanu anashim v'tzehi lachem b'amalek, that's for sure. He's a warrior. We're going to meet him in different contexts later. It's a Talmud of Moshe Rabbeinu. Mishar so Yeshua ben Nahar lo yamish mitofa awel. He's introduced to us in this stage as a warrior. And as Rashi says, this is the first indication that we have that Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership is going to be limited. Emmanuel.
Is that Moshe equating himself to Yehoshua, or is it like a
passion? Right, and we saw that was exactly the point that Chazal were noting, that it was a kind of an equation, because Leva Lecha, you know, Lanu, that there is a kind of an equation, you know, between Moshe and Yehoshua in this respect, that Chazal quote, Yichlo Talmidcha Chamei Balecha Kishalcha, that Moshe was equating Yehoshua with himself, was not a small thing, and reflected Moshe's great respect for his Talmud. We'll get into this a little bit more tomorrow, but just a little bit comment. The Rav, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that the three mitzvahs are appointing a king, fighting Amalek, and building the Beis HaMikdash, there are those who hold that the chiyuv of going to war against Amalek is really a chiyuv on the melech. In which case, the Rav said that Bechar Lanu Anashim was actually giving Yehoshua the status of a melech for these purposes. Moshe had the status of a melech, vayhi bishurin melech, v'isaseh b'rashayam. Yehoshua was also granted the status of melech, because only the melech is really allowed to lead the fight against Amalek. Please, by all means.
Isn't it like the
Oh, fascinating. Okay, well then that would work out very nicely in terms of Shaul and his role. Yeah, very well thought out. Okay. Yeah, Shimon Rosh.
What's Rashi saying on
Yad? Okay, so let's now talk about that. Kiyad al Kesfam il Chamal Hashem Bamalek. So, apropos Emmanuel's point, this is the last point that we'll cover today. It's not just that the Jewish people somehow are going to face this intergenerational battle against Amalek, but Eitan, what was the point that Rashi was driving at there? It's not the kisei, and it's not the yud, and then hey, and then vav, and then hey, but
it's all incomplete.
Right. Ein kiso shalem ve'ein shemosh HaKadosh Baruch Hu shalem until the defeat against Amalek. Now, what does that mean exactly? I mean, theologically and philosophically speaking, this is a highly problematic statement. God's perfection cannot be contingent on anything else. And yet, from a human point of view, the sense of God's presence in the world is mitigated, if you will, to an extent, by the presence of Amalek. Now, who can conceptualize this in terms that we've established? What made the Jewish people vulnerable to Amalek? Exactly. A lack of awareness on the part of the Jewish people that God was very much in their midst. Hayesh Hashem bekirbeinu imayim. As such, if that's true, and since that's true, then God's kisei, God's malchus, so to speak, is really contingent on the Jewish people recognizing God's contribution. Okay. That's a very important point. Okay. So, Emmanuel, that gets to your question of why everything is divided.
Okay? Very good.
So God willing, what we're going to do tomorrow is we're going to pick it up with the Ramban, and we're going to transition into a discussion based on the Gemara in Masechta Megillah of how this pasuk was ultimately utilized by Esther for the canonization, the standardization of Purim as a holiday and as the Megillah as part of, an intrinsic part of Sifrei Tanakh.